Please rise.
Back and forth.
Join me in the salute to our flag. I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. Clerk will now take the roll call.
Councilmember Hansen?
Here.
Councilmember Olson?
Here.
Councilmember Mutler?
Here.
Councilmember Zimmerman?
Here.
Councilmember Goodrich?
Here. Okay, next up is the public comment period. Oh, excuse me, that's right. Both Councilor Zimmerman and Councilor Watson
Ingram,
excuse me, are on vacation. They ask to be excused. I accept the nomination.
I excuse them.
Second.
Okay, moving second. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, you are excused. Okay, public comment period. This is a period where members of the public can come speak to the council on anything that is not on tonight's agenda, anything your heart's desire, 3 minutes maximum. Anyone in the audience like to speak other than you? No one else? Okay, good. We're good with that. Okay, you
go, Josh.
Go, Josh. Okay, now this is going to be a bit repetitive. Those of you who were not here last meeting missed out on my world discovery.
I'm sure. Name and address.
Oh, you want your name and address? I don't know your name.
No, no, just yours. We have to be official.
Okay, it's Papa John Robinson at 6072 Malloy, otherwise known as Malloy House here in Fernburg. If those of you were not here last time, and I've forgotten who that was, who was that were not here?
I heard it, though.
Oh, you already heard my discovery?
I went back and listened to the whole thing.
Okay, so it was incredible. Thank you. But I also, let me re-ask the same question I asked last time. Just for the sake of veracity, how many of you got a chance to take my challenge, which is park your vehicle and walk from downtown all the way down to through past the Ovander up to Walgreens and maybe even beyond? How many have taken that?
I jogged. It's that close.
Only one is not? I challenge you to do it, okay? I'm going to ask next meeting, too. This is for Mel. He likes it so much, I want to repeat what I said last week. Two of you heard this, but I am a conservative. And as such, that means I'm always right. Now, Mel missed this part. Occasionally, I'm correct. You missed that part last time, Mel. But Mel likes me to tell him that I'm a conservative. See? Huh?
How did I miss that?
You missed the part where I said sometimes I'm correct.
Because you didn't say it?
Yeah, I did say it, but you just...
Okay, you're cutting into 3 minutes if you're right.
Okay, I'm back again now. Obviously, in a few days, it's going to be autumn. And it will be 1 year ago in autumn that I started my campaign to try to get signs for the crosswalk at Hovander and crosswalks down at where the Asian Bistro is and where the bus stop is near the Shell station on, and again, remember I told you last time, for those that weren't here, I am talented in art, because I will draw blanks, and I've just drawn a blank again down there.
LaBounty,
where that bus stop is. There are no crosswalks at all, and I will remind all of us, it's a number one function of all government at any level is the protection of its citizens, notwithstanding that bogus, it's the economy, stupid. No, it's not the economy. If you've got a case of rigor mortis, the economy doesn't matter one way or the other. So the most important function of any government at any level, notwithstanding these trite comments, is the protection of its citizens. So I want to reiterate that I, as a citizen, I walk every day, and I definitely don't look good with tire tracks on my forehead. Not that I look good without them either. But please, at this point, after nearly a year, I have not seen any progress whatever. I have heard of some vague reference to somebody's doing something, maybe. I would urge you to help me out on this, and then next meeting I have a different tact I'm going to go to when it comes to save beauty, but that's it for now. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
There is a test on this.
Okay. Anyone else we went through? Okay, moving on. Council, the consent agenda is before you.
Moved. Go ahead. I move to accept this consent agenda as presented.
Okay, moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Okay, and Councilperson Olson wanted to squeeze in a statement about a correspondence he had.
Most of you, except with John, wasn't here last week or 2 weeks ago when we did the library board bond ordinance. Apparently you listened to it, so you heard. I got a lot of comments from fellow council members thanking me for eating crow and saving it. I got a really nice one from Maury Ingram thanking me for changing my decision, even though she understood that I really wasn't for it, but I put the project first, which the only reason I did was for the majority. It was 1-6. So it really was more or less me saying I didn't like it, but six of you saying you did. And then when we did the bond thing, it failed because Lloyd also voted no, and I had to change my vote in order for it to pass. And if we didn't, that would have canned the groundbreaking and just put it off to this meeting. Well, looking at the makeup of this meeting, it wouldn't have passed this meeting either, and we'd have been into October. So my point being is I respected the will of the majority. I did not can it because of my personal dissatisfaction with the whole project. And I think council members in this council need to think about the will of the majority and not always go behind the scenes to try and make things go their way so they can gloat on Facebook or whatever, just so they can win all the time. Sometimes you have to put what project is first, or whatever it is, and respect the will of the majority. And that's all I
have. Well said.
Thank you.
The community of Ferndale thanks you. Okay, next up is capital project updates.
Good evening, Council. So we'll start off with the Guinevere Alley Sewer. That project, if you remember, was to replace a short section of sewer between Guinevere Street and Main Street in the alley between Hamlin and Sterling. That work was completed a few weeks ago. Tiger Construction got that complete. So the building owner for the multiplex there, Jim Unruh, could continue on with his project to get that underway. So the project is done and was completed within budget. So if anybody has any questions, I'll
talk. What was that last part?
Completed within budget.
Okay, just bug.
All right. Next item would be, let's talk about Thornton Road. Thornton Road's been pretty much substantially complete for a couple weeks now. You might see the contractor up there tomorrow doing a little bit of work on a driveway, but other than that, the project's pretty much done. That included a full road reconstruct, new sewer, some waterline improvements, a rain garden to handle stormwater flows, and then landscaping. So, got some pretty nice compliments about that. My favorite kind of cute story to tell is the day that the road was reopened, there was a little girl on a bike, and she was pedaling up the road and stopped a flagger, and she's like, "Excuse me, lady, excuse me. And she's like, stepped out of her way, and she said, "Oh, I'm sorry." She goes, "Oh, your road is so pretty, I just have to drive on it with my bike." So anyway, it's nice to see everybody out there using the new facilities.
That's great.
Any questions?
On that subject or other subject that you may have?
Oh, I can continue on to the next project.
Okay, let's do that.
Okay, thanks. So the next project would be Vista Drive. That project is pretty much complete, will be mostly complete as of the end of the day tomorrow. We've got some landscaping work to do on the backside of the sidewalk, some minor punch list items. They poured the last of the sidewalk today. We're doing a little work on a catch basin. Other than that, we're pretty much complete. Just to remind everybody again, that was designed as a pavement repair project, which also included a new sewer line installation and some water line upgrades. And so we've got new pavement, new sewer, and some other new improvements for the community.
Councilor Olson?
It would actually be probably for Janice more than Katie. Now that that's finished, When does Mr. Braithwaite get to start?
We'll move forward on that. Yeah. And we just, there's just kind of just the mayor.
It actually is, in terms of the house that we're going to block, this poor gentleman that owns the house now or is in the process of purchasing it, he signed the purchase agreement, works two jobs, so he wasn't available to speak until the weekend. And then he works on weekends, so I finally tracked him down Sunday at 1:30 to talk to him about what he thinks is the value of losing his ability to go left out. So we're going to find a, if there is a value, and negotiate with him on that process. So we're moving forward towards that.
So just as a side note on the Vista Drive project, just really want to thank council members for being supportive of this project, as well as the community's patience. I know that it's been kind of difficult. Vista Drive is a very hard area to try to redirect traffic around, and so there were some challenges as far as that goes. And I think we're all to be commended for our patience and understanding how that works was underway. So thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Any other questions on the projects?
Got one other item. The last item is Church Road. Can't forget about Church Road because we are still moving forward. We are working with the utility companies to get their poles moved so that when we do get money to build that road, which we are fully moving forward to get accomplished, that we'll be able to start construction. So don't forget about that one.
And Katie is smiling about that because in committee, you had kind of made the impression that unless we got some federal and state money, we were not going to bond for that. Well, in terms of putting this project together, in terms of the need and where we are in terms of construction, this project was rated number one, the number one project in Whatcom County that will go for the Council of Governments. The next COG meeting will be a debate on the merits of that, but in terms of the scoring system, we're number one. So we're still hoping that we see for 2014 funding for Church Road. We are in a better position than we were in the past, so we hope to go forward. Councilperson Mutchler?
And just to illustrate what we all know concerning the urgency of Church, it was about 3 weeks ago I was paying up it. I'm assuming this gentleman got off the bus because he was with a stroller with a baby, and he had no place to be except the grass off on his shoulder. And he couldn't do it. I mean, you can't push a stroller through that grass. And I actually stopped. I said, "Can I help you?" Because it looked so frighteningly dangerous. So I couldn't be more thrilled that this seems to be, it's on the top of the list to move for. Or I don't know what he was doing there, but it was very dangerous.
Okay, council member, everyone adjust your microphones.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
That's it.
Got any other questions? All right.
Councilperson Goodrich?
Is our pond all, the Main Street pond, is that done, or wasn't there landscaping that was going to be done this fall or something with to finish that up? Or
For Main Street, we're taking a look at the budget and the money that we have available. To answer your question about the pond construction itself is complete. We have a little repair to do on a berm, which is done. It's called dam safety, no N, just dam safety. Anyway, came out and they signed off on the berm on the pond. Wendy is heading up some mitigation work that's going on right now. I don't have the details on that. So that work is happening at that same site. And then I've also been in contact with the city's tree board in regard to adding landscaping trees in the landscape strip along Main Street. So they provided a list of acceptable trees that, you know, won't grow too tall for the overhead lines there. So we'll be moving forward with a contract for that.
I have one other project question. Whatever happened with the police station and Lego development there?
Yeah, if you remember the council, I think earmarked, I believe it was $75,000 for improvements to Lego. And Public Works is currently working on that, and we've been told that it's going to be done here this fall.
Can you provide an update?
Yeah, so we are working on a design for that. There's kind of some right-of-way and site distance issues there, so we're working on the best approach to be able to use the very small space that we have available to us with the kind of small pot of money that we have available as well to make some improvements to the turning radius as well as pedestrian accessibility in that area. So we're working on that to get that out to bid. Probably we'll put that out soon on the city small works roster just because it is a smaller project.
So that's something that will be done hopefully this year?
That's the goal. Thanks for reminding me about that one, too.
Why did you snicker?
Oh, I asked about it 3 months ago. So it'll be done this summer. Like,
it will be done.
Really? This summer is going by pretty quick here.
I don't know. Last week is nice.
Small on Saturday.
I've asked on a continued basis. And really, you're still going with predictions it's going to be done by summer?
Yeah. Summer.
When's the last day of summer?
Next Monday.
Oh, yeah. Huh, 22nd. Last day of summer.
Okay. I was just rocking into my mind because I saw some crew there, city crew working Saturday with the back truck and stuff in that area. And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. We never finished that area.
It gets brought up in staff on a regular basis. Okay, any other questions?
Next thing.
What's this for?
The next item.
Next item on the agenda.
Any other questions?
Okay, so any more questions for Katie and we'll relieve her of duty?
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job. Okay, this is a public hearing on a latecomers agreement. Welcome, Yori.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Council. Associated with the Vista Drive project, we've had a property owner, Arlene Sanders, come in and see whether or not she could take advantage of the fact that we were mobilized out to the project and to extend water and sewer main from the Vista Drive project onto her property. The city has a policy of restricting new curb cuts or new work within the public right-of-way for a period of 5 years after work has been done in order to preserve the lifespan of it for as long as possible. And Mrs. Sanders recognized that if she wishes to proceed with development within that time period, now would be the time to extend those services. In extending those services, and she has paid the majority of the costs of extending those, she further recognized that other property owners adjacent to her might also be able to benefit from those extensions. And that's what this map shows. And I do have some extra copies here. Once council has had a chance to review it and hopefully accept the latecomers agreement, we would, of course, modify this map showing the final boundaries. But when you're talking about water and sewer in the benefit area, you really need to look at the technical specs. Is there gravity? Can they actually be serviced by these areas? And that's why when you look closely, you see a silver boundary there. That's for water. It's a little bit smaller area. And then the larger black boundary is for sewer. What we're asking the council to approve tonight is the methodology where these properties represent a certain percentage of the whole benefit area. That percentage will not change. The benefit area is not expected to change because it simply cannot be serviced beyond there. Since we are still awaiting some final invoices from the contractors, we don't yet have the final amount of the costs, but what we're asking the council to approve tonight after this public hearing is to accept the methodology, accept the range of costs that we've identified, and then provided that it is not more than 10% greater than what we've estimated, the council's job would be done and staff and the applicant would work together to finalize that agreement. Really a straightforward project, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
And it is a public hearing, so we'll open up to the public, so no opinion questions, just exploratory questions. Councilor Goodrich?
You were asking for a 10% kind of contingency type thing. Is it really important that the council set a dollar amount, or can we just leave it as whatever the final cost is so we don't have to guesstimate, or all of a sudden it comes back at 11%, now you have to come back to council again? Can we just put it as a
And I think that that's really going to be up to council. We didn't want to say this is precisely what it's going to be. We wanted to let council know that, but leave some room for the invoices to come in without needing to come back to you. The council could certainly say, we accept the methodology and we don't need to see this again.
Councilperson Olson?
I'm not really clear. What is the cost? Is there any cost to the city? I just see what it costs, but I don't really see who paid it. Or is that we going to?
Yeah. Did you want?
So Mrs. Sanders contacted the city and said, okay, you're doing underground construction in front of my residence. I am aware of this policy that you're not allowed to dig in the new asphalt for a certain amount of time. I would like to extend water and sewer utilities to my property so that I don't have to dig up the asphalt. And so what I did is I worked with the contractor. I came up with a change order price for doing that work. Provided that to Mrs. Sanders. She paid the bill. So the proponent, Mrs. Sanders, has paid for that cost. There is no cost to the city. It's been paid by her entirely. The one item that I am waiting on is that the water line extension, they had to do a little bit of extra work that they did not anticipate at the time of their that they put together their bid for the change order work. And so that's the cost that I'm waiting to come in. And we will pay, we pay our contractor. The Sanders pays the city. Mm-hmm. So it passes right through. But that will be an actual cost based off of an invoice and, labor. Actual labor.
Okay, so whatever this thing that you don't know about is coming up, she's on the hook for that also?
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions of staff, council? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to the public hearing part. I have no one signed up, but someone still may want to come forward and speak. A public hearing is a formal opportunity to give testimony to the council for consideration in their decision-making process. Written comments may also be submitted to the city clerk prior to the beginning of the hearing. When the mayor calls your name, proceed as follows. Audience members sign up. No one signed up. You can still raise your hand. You'll be called first to speak. If you're unable to sign up before the meeting, you'll get an opportunity to address the council once you've got through all the speakers listed on the hearing sheets. Each speaker should state his or her name, address for the record, and be given 3 minutes to address the council. When a large group of individuals supports the same position on an issue, we encourage the selection of one or two representatives to speak on behalf of the entire group. So at 6:22:43... I'll open up the public hearing. Does anyone from the public wish to come forward and speak on this issue? Okay, seeing none, I'll close the hearing at 6:22:55. And I have a council member with a hand up. I believe Councilperson Mutchler had his hand up.
Yeah, I move the approval of the latecomers agreement as presented by staff.
I second. Okay, then move and second it. Further discussion. Councilperson Olson, Councilmember Goodrich.
One small thing. The city attorney has discussed, I'm assuming we're talking about Dan and Traxler.
Correct.
Okay. That kind of scares me when I don't see a name associated. Thank you.
You are correct in your assumption. Councilperson Goodrich?
I would like to make an amendment to the motion that it be the dollar amount be changed to final invoice presented by the contractor, so there's no possibility of it coming back to us just because of a dollar amount change. We have to go through this process again.
I'll second the amendment.
Okay, we move a second. Further discussion on the amendment. Okay, Councilperson Zimmerman?
Yuri, what implication would Goodrich's amendment?
Since the work is done, it's really just a smallish range of price. I mean, we're
just waiting on an invoice from their parts supplier for the cost of the parts.
Yeah. So maybe we are talking about 11% instead of 10%. We're not talking about a 500% increase.
Yeah. So his amendment, though, wouldn't hamper that process in any way whatsoever. Okay. So any discussion on the amendment? We'll vote on the amendment first. Okay, all in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Okay, the motion carries. On the main motion.
The main amended motion.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion carries.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on.
Okay, ordinance. Fats, oils, and grease. Welcome, Public Works Secretary. Thank you, Ms. Sanders.
Good evening, Council. Public Works staff, we have been working on updating, actually, Ordinance 1212, which regulates industrial dischargers. And within this ordinance, it addresses the fats, oil, and grease, but there's just like a small amount of information. And as far as dealing with the fats, oil, and grease, it's such a big problem, and usually agencies, they set up their own program in order to address it. And so that's what we've done, is set up a separate ordinance rather than include the fats, oil, and grease information in our ordinance 1212. And we've talked about this a couple times, probably more than a couple, maybe three or four times through the, kind of worked this through the Public Works Committee. And the primary goal of this ordinance is to reduce the discharge of fats, oil, and grease into the sewer system. And so we're looking at requiring food service establishment and food manufacturing / processors to prepare a fats, oil, and grease management plan. That's the first step. So they have to look at, you know, where they generate the fats, oil, and grease and how to manage it within their business. So that's the first step. And then most likely they're probably going to need to install a grease interceptor or grease trap. And then we're looking at requiring them to do reporting, maintenance, and then the monitoring. And on this, we would require all new businesses to comply with this full ordinance. Existing businesses would have 2 years to submit the fog management plan, and then 1 year to implement that plan. So we're going to give them, you know, plenty of time to take a look at their business, and also to give staff enough time to go out there, meet with the businesses, talk to them about the ordinance, why we need it, go over best management practices, and just do a lot of public outreach and education within that two years. And then they still have that 1 year then to actually implement their plan. So that's what we're proposing as part of this ordinance. And then what we'll do is the effective date on this ordinance, the fats, oil, and grease ordinance is referenced in Ordinance 1212. We'll be bringing this ordinance probably within the next probably 2 weeks to a month, because we're not quite completed with this update. But we had this one ready to go, so we're bringing this one forward. Set this aside, then once this is adopted, then both of these become effective.
Councilperson Olson?
Did we notify all the businesses that this would affect?
Well, what we have done is, like all the new ones, we've been meeting with all the new businesses, which there haven't really been too many. Like, let's just
is this affect restaurants?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Right, so, and we've mailed out information in the utility bill. We've also been in contact with some, and we've been handing these out. So we've already done some public outreach and education, and then we're just going to keep continuing that. And we have the information posted on our website, and we're going to keep adding to that. So we've done some notification.
My point noted, I mean, if you look on the ordinance, is existing businesses have what we would mm-hmm. be considered, you know, an extensive period of time to adhere to this, but they are going to have to adhere to it.
Well, that was the second portion of my thought. So often, mm-hmm. and I, other council members have complained about it, and I do also, we don't do outreach enough before we pass these things. We pass them, and then all hell breaks loose out there. And I think we need to get away from that, and if we notify them before, then they could come and say what they want to say before we do vote on this. The flip side of that is, I think 3 years is too long. I mean, how bad of a problem is this? Do you get a lot of this stuff messing up the system?
We have some problem areas that we have to take care of on a regular basis, but I wouldn't...
3 years is a long time to put up with that. Just,
well,
is there a reason
so
for
I'll,
that?
I'll shift your gears for a second. I mean, because this is a move for Ferndale to require grease traps that we haven't done before.
Mm-hmm.
And so that for some, for retrofitting, that is a complicated endeavor. Mm-hmm. And it is an expense. There's no doubt about that. What you as a council are voting on is that you recognize the advice from staff that we do need to solve this problem.
Right.
Now, in terms of 3 years, I can't really personally debate that with you, but for certain businesses, it's going to be a financial hit.
Is this very expensive to do?
Retrofit, yeah, you're $3,000 to $4,000, and so for some businesses, that's a terrible thing. So we want if we could get everyone to go exact education and watch what they put down drains, and that's a nice chance of doing that. I don't have faith in that working 100% of the time.
No,
I think 3 years gives businesses quite a bit of time to consider it. Will some businesses wait till the last 30 days? Yes, that's human nature. But you as a council now are deciding, yes, we recognize the advice from staff that we need to clean things out of our drain. You could certainly change the 2 or 3 years if that's what staff is recommending.
How expensive is it to the city to have to keep doing this for the next 3 years? I mean, somebody's going to have to pay, whether it be the people that are causing it or whether the people that have to fix it.
There have been times where, and it's beneficial that we have a jetter truck, and so we have high-pressure water jetting. There has been times on some private places where our truck has had to go out and try to clear grease or large obstructions. So there's no doubt about that.
And we're not reimbursed, correct?
No.
Not once it's in like the sewer main. When it's
we don't really know where it mm-hmm. came from.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at times this city has been very generous in going on private property and clearing drains. I know not on a regular basis, but at least once a year we go on the Cost Cutter, Bob's Burger and Brew bowling alley and basically do preventive jetting because we don't want to have a problem that clogs them all up. So It's a direction that needs to be taken. City of Bellingham has had it for, 18 years in terms of a fat oil grease ordinance. So, good move to make.
Yeah. So
Councilperson Zimmerman?
I'm probably the only person in this building besides our mayor who had the privilege of digging through one of these grease traps, and they're skanky. And it's, to me, I'm in total agreement with Councilman Olson, and that we know this has been a problem for a long time, from even just walking by and smelling the smells of putrid grease as it breaks down. It's just terrible. It's a health concern. And I think our staff and our public works department, along with the large equipment that we've invested in, it's great to be preemptive out there and doing it. I agree. Two years of thinking about it, 1 year to implement it, to me, that's way too long. Let's start fixing the problem today. And what I would suggest, since Councilman Olson was saying, who's going to pay for that? Well, we're kind of paying for it already. So we should have some sort of little special matching slush fund or something of our sewer and water treatment plant, all the money that we have out there, that justifies going out there and helping these people do the right thing. They may not own their business, they may not get to write off the full 20-year amortization of this investment. They may just be renters. But if, you know, our mayor and the staff could come up with some kind of a plan, I would like to see this. I'm all for it, but I'd really like to see it implemented a heck of a lot sooner than 3 years, because it's a huge problem.
Okay, before we go to Councilperson Goodrich, and I'll speak for our finance director, for the record, we have no secret slush funds in the city.
No, so I'm saying create one.
So
it doesn't have to be secret, but I'm just saying this is what it's for, to take care of this problem preemptively, as we are doing. We're taking resources and manpower now from our group and going out there and blowing it all out. Let's help them do it right with the best available technologies and be the partner cleaning up the system, because once it gets thrown through the system, it's going to cost us either at the point of use or way down the line. And I think it's been alluded that can be a heck of a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Councilperson Goodrich?
My question goes more to, okay, we've implemented this, and I kind of feel we're headed down the road that we've done so many other times, where we put in an ordinance, and then how are we going to enforce it? The enforcement aspect of, do we have the staff that's going to enforce it? How are we going to be able to find out if somebody, I put my grease trap in, but just because you put it in doesn't mean you necessarily clean it, service it, and that type of thing, to be able to come back and, find out, the offending party, and, fines and stuff like that if they don't. Because I have a grease trap, and where I work, it takes two and a half Bacter trucks to clean out, so it's a good size grease trap. But if I don't clean it out, is the city of Bellingham going to be able to come back and fine me or whatever, how does that going to work?
Yeah.
I'll let staff answer that, and we'll go to Councilor Simonson.
Yeah, and we do have that set up under the reporting and the enforcement section. And right now we track for water all the backflow devices, and we have a database set up. And we have administrative help that they send out letters, they track, they make sure that those backflow devices are tested and certified each year. So this year with these with the grease interceptors, we would set it up pretty much the same way. That we would send the letters out saying you need to submit your reports. If those don't come up, then they come in, then there would be the follow-up phone call asking about it. And then, if necessary, then staff would have to go out there and talk to the owner. So,
who? Staff-wise?
It would be Mike from our plant. It would be the chief plant operator that would go out.
Water department. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then
with sewer.
What's going to be the fine or whatever? Or we haven't got, is that the next?
I just
don't remember reading.
Look there.
Yeah, so in this version, we went ahead and the city attorney added the enforcement section, but we will be actually taking that out of this ordinance, and we're just going to have one enforcement section set up in the code. And so there will be some revisions to this at a later date.
Okay, that's what I remember the committee talking about.
Right, when we first get this set up, I mean, we're looking at it kind of as an ongoing working relationship. Partnership. We want to work with the business owners, and so that's why we wanted plenty of time to go out there, establish the working relationship, talk to them, go explain why we need this ordinance, go over what goes into the fog management plan, really encourage the use of the best management practices, because even if we can get some businesses to use those, that there is will make a big difference. So if we get anything, it's going to help. And so we're trying to be proactive and get this in place, talking to the businesses before it becomes a big, huge problem. That's why we thought, on the 2 years, talking to them, the outreach, and then the 1 year to implement, I still feel that that's very reasonable and that is a good approach. So that gives us time to establish a working relationship, and to really encourage the use of the best management practices.
Councilperson Mutchler, then Olson.
That might be a Sam question. I'm just curious why this is not a public hearing as an ordinance.
There are very few times in state law where an official public hearing is required. When they usually do state laws, they operate under the assumption that local jurisdictions cannot be trusted and therefore need to require a time to allow the public to be invited up to speak to you and share their thoughts. At the City of Ferndale, we invite the public to speak on every single issue no matter what. So yes, we do have required public hearings sometimes where we have to notice them and no one reads that in the paper anyway, and we put out a sign-up sheet. This is not one of those times where it's required under state law, but we are going to invite the public up to speak anyway.
Councilperson Olson.
I'm still leaning towards, I like this, but I'm leaning towards scratching 2 years to 1 year to come up with a plan, 1 year to implement.
I'll second that.
That's 2 years in order to spend, what'd you say, $4,000? I know really that's your estimate for one. But I just think 3 years is an awfully long time if this is such an issue to put it off for 3 years. Do we have that many businesses we really have to talk to? There's not really that many restaurants.
Well, I guess to put it into perspective, though, is if you look at Main Street right now, we have one grease trap.
Right.
One. And so look
at how many would have to have
from first to third.
All of them.
Well, and that's, you know, that becomes a health department debate in terms of anything that can produce grease. I had a restaurant, a national chain, that said, well, we don't need a grease trap because we basically microwave all our product is cooked. It's in plastic containers, and then it's microwaved. And then the health department said, so how do you wash the utensils or dishes that people have? Well, we wash them in the sink, which creates grease. So, argument out. So, it's always a debate. The sizing of a grease trap is based on number of seats, number of meals you serve.
But this just pertains to restaurants.
Well, anyone that would could produce grease, in terms of, I don't think
food.
Carol would qualify, but I haven't looked at a bakery in a long time. Typically, it's restaurants.
Yeah.
But it didn't really.
Yeah, in the ordinance under food, there's food manufacturer / processor. And they just give some examples. So that there's like dairies, slaughterhouse, meat processing, packing facilities, industrial bakeries, cooking oil facilities, canning facilities. And then under food service establishment, it lists include restaurants, bakeries, commercial kitchens, caterers, hotels, schools, religious institutions, hospitals, prisons, correctional facilities, and care institutions. Basically, if they're preparing food. The thing is, that depending on, you know, they put together their fog management plan, if they're only like, because there's a limit. The allowable limit is like 100 milligrams per liter. So if they could demonstrate that their discharge waste would have less than that, then they could be exempt from this ordinance. So they would have to be able to demonstrate.
Do you want to put that in the form of a motion?
Correct.
I move for approval of AB 1309005, striking the 2 years to submit a fog management plan to 1 year, and everything else stays the same.
I'll second that.
Okay. Discussion on that from council. We'll go to public too. Councilperson Mutchler.
Yeah, I'm inclined to supporting the original ordinance because I know that sometimes you have an owner and a renter, and you know this needs to be done, but it is a significant hit to some of these smaller businesses. I would be voting no on the 2 year, but I would support the 1 year.
You talked about the amendment.
There's no amendment.
Dropping it from 3 to 2.
Well, it's not an amendment. It was placed in the main motion.
Okay.
I was confused by what you said there at the end, that you would vote for the 1 and 1 or
no.
Vote against the 1 and 1 for the 2 and 1.
I will vote against this as is, and if it fails, I will resubmit the original ordinance as a motion.
Okay, any further discussion by council before we open up to the public? Councilperson Zimmerman?
I think Carol's here. She's an example of a small business that did a very small amount, and it was probably way beneath the 100 milligrams per liter, way below there. So, I mean, your process does work. So there are checks and balances working with the staff, and I think that will make it work. It's not going to be a real draconian thing that we're going to shut people down, but larger industrial processes And people need to realize, and this is part of your outreach, that every residence, chances are at times, violates that thing, depending on what they're doing in their home. You know, and so it's just not an industrial, commercial problem. It's citywide. But this is a good place to start because of the largest problems happens with the magnified oils and grease from commercial and industrial processes. So I support the...
Okay, one more council comment before we go to the public.
I'd like to have my comment after the public.
Okay.
If I can just add, especially for smaller businesses, and I've seen in other places, a lot of times the food handling techniques can have as much or practically more. I mean, a good rubber scraper into the garbage and a roll of paper towels before any dish or any utensil hits hot water in the sink does a remarkable amount of reduction when it comes to that. So this just is not limited, or at least I would hope that that the public doesn't believe that we're going to be requiring every user to put these underground grease traps. There's other ways to do it. Good food handling as well as some just some under-counter kind of things that require maintenance. But still, you can do this expensively or you can do it cheaply. It doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, a lot of money.
Well, true. But for some businesses,
first of all, for the big ones, like the Hemplers of the world, if indeed they do produce a lot of
work, they have one.
The vault is as big as a Volkswagen.
Exactly,
it's probably even bigger.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's open the public. Anyone in the public would like to come home and speak on this? There she is. Welcome, welcome.
Carol Birch, 5426 Nimbus Place here in Ferndale. And as many of you know, I do own a small retail bakery on Main Street. And when I opened just over 2 years ago, I was permitted to open without installing a grease trap. I rent, and my landlord would no way pay for a grease trap to be dug under my floor because there is no room. It would have to go underground, and that would be a deal breaker for me to stay in my location. I would not put out $5,000 or more to install a grease trap, and I would need the 2 to 3 years to think about where I would relocate. That's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Any questions for this? Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Anyone else? Okay. Back to Council, Councilor Zimmerman.
I guess I missed my opportunity because I was thinking. But, Carol, was the city amenable? I mean, it took a little effort on your part to kind of...
I approached the mayor and the director of public works, and they gave me the council, and Paul Ingram is the one who brought it to everybody's attention that retail bakeries create minimal grease capitals.
I'll jump into it is... I've been involved with lots of them. It's always a debate. It's a debate on the size, how it's sized, how big it is.
Who's going down there?
And it's always a debate, and certainly the city. We are a welcoming city. I mean, we're not going to go out with a heavy hand and, okay, well, let's work this with you. And if you can prove that you're not producing grease, great. You know, like Keith said, we want to eliminate the problem. And if the people that are problem people... We want to regulate. The people are a problem. We don't want to regulate. Councilperson Goodrich?
I have to, after thinking about it, the way this is presented, I can't vote for it strictly because I know that there are a lot of businesses that could put an under-counter grease trap and they'd be fine, minimal expense. But if you have, in the case of our kitchen, we have a triple sink to wash pots and pans in, and we have a separate dishwasher and a separate prep sink that grease and things can go down. When you're talking about multiple sinks in a facility that all are affected by the grease, then you're talking about most likely a central underground grease trap, which now you've opened up a whole bigger expense and things to do on behalf of the business. Again, we have a lot of renters here in town that they'd have to work with their landlords or whatever. So I can't see, for some of the smaller places, yeah, we could probably do the year in a year. But other places, I think that would be too much of a, there's a potential to too much of an issue. Some of our churches that do food prep may have to do something larger, that the additional time may be required, especially if you're talking about now having permits and other things and stuff, digging up sewer lines or whatever to handle all this. I can see the two in one more out than the one in one.
So, Mr. Olson?
So you don't see any problem with the city picking up the bill for everybody else? Is that kind of where you're at on that?
No, I don't.
Because somebody's doing it. Either they're doing it or we're doing it.
No, I don't know how much of an issue that it really is. I know it's a potential issue. I'm also looking at it from the business slash other facilities that, you know, what is it possibly going to be entailed to put something in to do that? And it may not be a simple process to do. There may be other entities or things involved in it, especially if you're talking about a church or some other institution or whatever that may have to retrofit their kitchen to this. It may not be a simple plan of doing it or getting all the apples in line. Let's say like my business, if you came in and said, what we had to do, well, our head offices are in Salem, Oregon. So it's not me here, it's now you're dealing with the folks down in Salem, Oregon that have to do the processes and other state, entities that get involved in an assisted living type of thing that aren't requirements for a normal business. And so it's because of those additional things that I feel that the added time would be a value to it. You can't, in some industries, like especially like assisted living, you just can't go in and change things like you would in other businesses. You have to get state approval before you can, have to submit plans down to the state, get approval from them to be able to do certain changes to your facility. And it's not a simple process. It could take months to get the approval.
Councilperson Olson, then Henson.
Would Carol's business require something this extensive?
I'm not so sure she would qualify. I think that she probably could prove her discharges is, like Greg said, on the smaller ones, there's probably people that could do things differently and not require it, we said. Now, if you're deep frying things, no. But a small bakery, I think she probably could do some things. You can get around. I've seen some of them where they've proved it to, in Bellingham's health department in the city of Bellingham, it's like, okay, we wipe everything off and we make sure we throw the towels away. Not a great thing for towels, but it's a grease. So. Councilor Hanson?
Well, I was going to comment. I don't think I'm going to support the 2-year. I'll support the 3-year. I'm thinking about the churches. And many of the churches have commercial kitchens in this community, which means that they're almost for sure going to have to do some sort of extensive grease trap modification. Many of them are older churches, which means they undoubtedly do not have a process today. I did hear from the one church that I'm affiliated in that the whole thing could be a deal breaker. I think that's just saber rattling in my own opinion. But the more time we can give them, the better off. The one thing I'll remind everyone is as this program starts, it gets better and better and better for the city. It's not like because immediately any new facility will be required to adhere to this. The other facilities, some will be able to do this with a minor modification in their sink arrangement, and because they don't produce that much, it's one of those in-between things. Others are going to have major construction in order to do this. I suspect there are going to be companies out there, restaurants, that are large enough that $5,000 isn't even going to touch it. It's going to be more than that. I'd like to give them the benefit of the doubt. We've got 12,000 residents that live in this community that probably don't have grease traps at home, and they're dumping it all in the sewer.
We hope not.
We hope not, but...
Isn't
okay.
That what you're supposed to do with
Okay,
yeah.
And then back to you.
I would say, I totally agree with you. And there's a large movement in some of the cities that will actually, the cities will buy your garbage disposal because they don't want everything going down there, Take that stuff, put it in the side stuff along with the paper rag, and get rid of it. Get the solids out of that. And a lot of the thing, here's a good word for it, emollification. That's where you actually have your detergents that are breaking down and emollifying the fats and making them more, they're not gunking up like they would. So that's a big thing. So that's part of the process. But it's a large, like the mayor said, it's the fryers and the fried foods, and then if they don't have a good process and they haven't had the relationship with the city and they haven't had the education,
you know, for minimum wage, they just throw it down the garbage disposal, and rather than have the best available practices that we could bring them up to. So I think it's a win-win situation. I agree with, again, supporting it. But 2 years is enough, and, you know, if they want variations or different things, we can. It's easy. But we need to make a firm stance of what we want to do to clean up the water system.
Councilperson Olson?
Actually, it's a question. John, is this going to affect your church?
I don't think so. We just do potluck. People bring in stuff.
So you don't? It's not a...
We're not deep frying.
So it's...
Are you washing dishes there?
Well, you're washing dishes.
Yeah, so you might want
But the mollification.
Yeah, we'll deal with it as the city requires.
But then, yeah, it would just depend on...
Here's what's just interesting about churches. Ours is probably very typical in that we're maybe six times a year we have a potluck.
Mm-hmm.
And so as opposed to, I cook three meals a day at my home.
Yeah.
So who's causing greater damage, my home or my church?
Yeah, and then if you just probably just changed a few things, like, you know, wiping or using the rubber
trash
or whatever.
Yeah. We'll do that.
So do we have a lot of churches that...
Oh, we have the one, like the church that Mel talked about. They're probably the more serious because they do the community meal once a month. Mm-hmm. So they're
starting to have a licensed commercial kitchen.
One
more comment from Public Works.
Yeah, we do have a section on variance from grease interceptor requirements. And in here it says, you know, if there's, you know, where they could be exempt from the requirement, if there's just no adequate space for installation or maintenance of the grease interceptor, if it's impossible or impractical to install, operate, or maintain the grease interceptor. And there's a couple other items listed that I don't need to read. So, I mean, you know, if there's existing business that just there's just absolutely no place to install the grease interceptor, then we are going to work with them. And, you know, maybe there's a few just, you know, from that point on, just use best management practices. It might just come down to that. But that's still getting more than where we are at today with that business.
Okay, Councilperson Goodrich?
One thing I just thought of, what are we doing about other, there's something like the American Legion or Tillicum House, the pavilion, once we redo that or whatever, do those things fall under this, or is there a category that those senior center, are they considered, commercial kitchen?
Commercial kitchen, senior citizens. Center has a commercial kitchen. It's a license that you get from the health department.
Well, that's not really our definition.
No.
I mean, it's if you prepare food, if you process it, if you clean stuff, right? So the Tillicum House, which the city owns, would
what do people bring in?
Have to write a management plan and comply.
Mm-hmm. Senior center.
Mm-hmm.
So how are these other folks going to be notified that aren't restaurants, they're not commercial kitchens, but yet they do a lot of the food service?
Do they, if they have the food handling... I always forget the name of it. Is it the food service permit, food handling permit? Department of Health issues it?
Department of Health, yeah.
Right, so we have a list of that. So we're using that kind of as our starting point on identifying the businesses that we need to contact regarding this ordinance.
Well, then the Tillicum House probably wouldn't, because I don't believe that they have a Department of Health permit for that kitchen.
Yeah, because it would...
Individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, I have a food handler's permit, but that's not because it's my kitchen. It has to do with me individually knowing to keep food hot and all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt that the Tillicum House has a commercial permit.
Yeah, but we're starting with that Department of Health list because that is it's kind of lengthy. So we figure that's a good start, and then we go from there.
That's pretty much so.
I think we have some private schools and daycares and preschools that might possibly...
Correct. You are correct. Mm-hmm. School district main kitchen would be affected...
Oh, every one of the kitchens would be affected.
Yeah, because
they're washing dishes.
But then they may already have. I mean, if it's a fairly new building, hasn't been around too long. Maybe not. I know all the new buildings.
Okay, we have a motion before you. The motion before you is to bring the requirement down for the management plan from 2 years to one. So that
and approve the ordinance.
So one vote, if you voted this, you're approving everything and you're cutting the time there down. So all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Nay.
Aye.
3-2.
Fail.
Is that enough to pass?
No, you need four.
Councilperson Metzler?
I move the adoption of the ordinance as presented by the staff.
Second. Okay, we move and seconded. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed?
Aye.
Okay.
We'll bring it back next meeting.
Okay.
Talk about some more.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this is going to have to be cleaner than that, so I'm going to change my vote on the final motion to nay.
So we already called the vote, so I don't believe that you can change at this point. He's declared
the vote. Legislators can. Why can't I?
Rescind. Voting to rescind. We did
I just
week.
Know how much you appreciate parliamentary procedure, sir.
I don't believe that you are correct. Then I don't want to get into a parliamentary fight on it, but I believe that the motion would still fail, but it would be 3-2 the other direction. And you'll see it will become tremendously apparent in about 30 seconds if you allow me to do this.
All right. Perhaps I am wrong on this, and I don't have time, obviously, to review it.
Then I move to reconsider this at the next regular meeting.
Second.
Okay, then we move and second. Vote on that then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Reconsider on next. Right, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay.
Thank just you. Want to make sure.
There we go.
Legal.
Well, we would have brought it back modified.
Oh, okay.
Okay, moving forward.
That's why
we know how to get around.
On the next agenda.
Well, we're going to have to change it anyway.
We're on the same page. I guess my speech was a waste of time. All right, getting back in order here. Jail, S-D-E-I-S.
Yes, the supplemental draft environmental impact statement was released on Friday for the Whatcom County Adult Corrections Facility and Sheriff Headquarters. It's a supplement to the 2010 DEIS that the county put together. The public comment runs until 4:30 on Monday, October the 14th. Comments can be made to Mike Russell, Facilities Manager for Whatcom County. What I'm going through is there wasn't anything in your documents. We're not asking for anything. It's really more of a discussion talking about what's in the DSEIS.
That's it in your hand?
Yes, and it's actually on the website, too.
So when you sit down at the computer, we can access all that.
Absolutely. Everybody can access it from either our website or the Whatcom County website. Go through it. It's a very thick document, but as you'll see, a good portion of that is just the traffic analytics, which are just a bunch of numbers that are then put into words and described by Gibson Traffic consultants in here. So it's a very well-written document for an SEIS, so I kind of qualify it that way. So there is going to be a public comment meeting in this room and probably the room across the hallway next Thursday, September the 26th at 6 p.m. Members of the public can come in, can get a chance to kind of talk about it a little bit, and then can then submit a verbal comment. Obviously, they have until October 14th to submit a written comment, and anyone can do so. There are two action alternatives described in here. That's basically talking about configuring the LeBounty site in Ferndale in different ways. One of them shields the prison or the headquarters for the prisoners a little bit better than the other one, and then it also describes one no-action alternative, which is to maintain the downtown jail and the work center. So as an overview, most of the analysis talks about the compliance with the existing codes on the local, state, and federal level. And it talks about any number of things that we're going to be looking at, again, when and if a development comes in. It talks about wetland mitigation. When and if a proposal comes in, we're going to look at that again, based on our critical areas ordinance. Talks about shoreline. We're going to have to take it through a shoreline substantial development review here at the city. Building code requirements, obviously, if there's a submittal, there's going to be building permits. Frontage improvements, that's something else that we'll look at. The same as we do with any other development, maybe a little bit larger than other developments. When you're going through this, if you do get a chance to go through it, as with most of these, there's an executive summary, and then there's really the meat of it where it explains it. Table S1-1 and S1-2 identify impacts that can be mitigated. Those are things such as the majority of wetland impacts, where this plant is gone, but then you replace it with two trees over there. And it goes through any number of things, construction impacts, ways to make sure that there's erosion control in place, things like that. S1-2 is one that talks about the environmental impacts that are really more unavoidable. These are impacts that will change the character of either the site or the surrounding areas. So it identifies 3.1 acres of wetlands which will no longer exist. They would be replaced elsewhere on the site, but they would no longer exist because there are going to be buildings on there. About 16 acres of plants and other things that right now it's a vacant piece of property and it will be a built-upon piece of property. Talks a little bit about the fact that aesthetically things will change. It'll go from a vacant piece of property to a built piece of property, and that does have an impact on the surrounding area. Even if it can be mitigated, it still changes the condition from unbuilt to built, and that is a change that you can't hide. Same as the size of the buildings. There are big buildings there, and they would be obvious. Transportation, additional trips will be generated. Traffic impact fees will pay for for the additional capacity needs. And there would be some improvements along Slater and at other intersections that they would need to do to mitigate for this. One of the common things that you'll see going through here is that the impacts are not necessarily different from other types of development in some cases, but they occur more rapidly than we would have otherwise expected. So for our utilities, this is equivalent more or less to 2 or 3 years worth of growth. As Mr. Peterson went over, we have a certain amount of growth that we expect each year. This would tend to take that growth and accelerate it. So that's not necessarily a SEPA impact. It's just saying that the horizon year for certain improvements that we might have been talking about might need to be pushed forward a little bit. That's going to be something that's really not a SEPA thing, but something that's more of a city thing where we talk about how to deal with that. Moving on a little bit, the fiscal analysis was something that folks were really interested in, and that's something that the city worked hard on with Burke Consulting. We talked about it a little bit last week or last meeting, wanted to talk about it a little bit more. Property tax, as we talked again earlier, the city gets a certain amount of property tax per year, and it's distributed amongst all of the property owners in town. The more properties that come online, we don't necessarily increase our property tax, but we just distribute it amongst more people. So in this case, when we have a piece of property that would no longer be on the property tax rolls, the city would still get the same amount of property tax from the area or from the city as a whole, but it would result in an incremental uptick on the other properties within the city because that property would no longer be paying the property tax.
It's spread out over the entire population of the county?
Of the city.
Of the city.
Councilperson Olson?
That's almost, if we're going to get payment in lieu of from them, and we're also going to get it from the citizens, that's like double dipping.
We wouldn't get it in lieu from them.
We don't get it from them.
Oh, they're not going to make us some sort of payment.
It's not like federal property where you get in lieu of property tax.
No, I understand that. But I thought part of our negotiation was you're going to give us this for taking it off the tax rolls.
Yeah.
So are we going to do that?
No, because of the redistribution of property taxes within the tax base, their point is that we're not losing a penny.
No, the rest of us are.
Yes.
Unless you live outside of town.
I thought the discussion was land. We're losing 40 acres
right.
of land, and they're going to give us 40 acres.
And that's going to be a separate.
Yeah. Yeah. And those were just, throw mud at the wall. And
Councilperson Zimmerman?
You're
And we've paid Burke about $2,700 so far from this, or it'll be more?
We haven't paid any to Burke. The county's paying for this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Could I get a printed copy? And if you think there's some stuff that I shouldn't have as boilerplate, I can go without that. But I've had some people call me up, and then I computer, and it's brand new. And because I'm one of the proponents that are just saying, excuse me.
That information is all complete on the website.
Right.
So but I would like to print a copy.
I would like it printed up for me.
You can print a copy yourself off the website.
On my own expense. I would like it on city expense. Thank you.
Denied.
I'd still charge you for it.
Okay. We'll do that then.
Councilperson Mutchler.
The property tax issue, that piece of raw line, my iPad died. That parcel couldn't be looked at. It's currently, current property taxes aren't that much. It's spread out among thousands of homes. It's not going to be that much increase because it's right down to actual.
Correct. And so we also looked at a number of other things. Land value, that was a concern of many of the adjacent property owners, especially residential property owners, feeling that a jail going into their neighborhood would have a significant negative impact on their property value, decreasing their ability to sell it and taking away their nest egg, really the most important investment someone can make. The Burke study went through, that this is a question, as you can imagine, that virtually every jurisdiction that has a potential jail or other facility like this asks. And so it had been answered in a number of different ways. And the conclusions are that there is no evidence that these result in a decrease in property values or that they result in an increase in property values. In most respects, the properties are adjacent or nearby a jail keep in line with the property values throughout the community. There's just no demonstrable evidence that the jail really impacts it. Certainly, during the course of jail construction, that there might be impacts that might be negative. What's going up there? Oh, it's a jail. Oh my gosh, I feel bad for you. That's certainly something that would be expected. But nationwide, there is no demonstrable evidence that there is a decrease. And in fact, the one location where there was a measurable decrease was in Goodyear, Arizona, where there was an Arizona State Prison that was being constructed, about 3,600 inmates. And the city, the Arizona Department of Corrections, actually did not go through a siting process. They did not go through this public process. They just said, we're building it here. As a result of a number of lawsuits, the Department of Corrections really got a black eye as a result of that. It was ultimately built, but it was so public in the Goodyear, Perryville, Arizona area that it became kind of known as that's the town where the jail got built and no one wanted it. And as a result, it did have a fairly significant or a measurable decrease in property values. But that was really the only one. And we did ask Burke, this is a question that people ask. It's the same question it was asked in King County. There was, interestingly, we all thought that there would be, evidence of a market decrease. There wasn't.
There was none that could be found.
And they did a what they thought was a thorough literature review. So, and I haven't seen any other studies either. I mean, I was looking before we contracted with Burke to see and to even say, hey, did you look at this? Did you look at that? I couldn't find anything that was different.
Don't people it seems to me when I talk to people, they look at a jail the same way they look at a state penitentiary. You're building Folsom Prison in my backyard, with the towers and everything on, and that's not what we're talking about. So I think you kind of have to separate the two entities from one from another, the big correctional facilities versus, a jail.
Well, and ironically, a number of the studies were based on those prisons, where folks are on death row, and those did not have a market decrease, and so the expectation would be that a local correctional facility would have even less. Obviously, during the course of construction, there are negative impacts, as we've seen when we have construction here. Moving on, though, a little bit, revenue changes. we've heard that the county is now expecting to spend approximately $109 million on this project, land acquisition, construction costs, on and on. That results in a fairly significant revenue bump to the city, a one-time revenue bump where we would get the sales tax on those construction materials. We'd also obviously get the permit fees. We get the connection fees and impact fees. Connection and impact fees aren't revenues per se. They are going to mitigate an impact. So that's not a up or down. It really needs to be exactly a pass-through. But we would get a revenue increase, a bump at first. And then over time, we wanted to compare that compared to the no-action alternative, what could be built there instead. What we found is over time, if you look at a full build-out industrial of the property, about 280,000 square feet, I think, an industrial facility would have more year-to-year revenues than a jail would to the city. The correctional facility wouldn't have a negative impact as far as our revenues. It would just be less. So those are the basic conclusions, and I guess, you know, to kind of wrap it up in a bow, I think that the conclusion would be that this is something that could be built, that could be mitigated for, that it does not create an overwhelming adverse environmental impact that would either cost too much or could not be alleviated.
Councilperson Olson, Councilperson Metzler.
Two things. The first one on property taxes. John kind of touched on it. So the property tax would actually be at the rate it's at now. It would be spread out. It wouldn't be the tax rate as if something was built up in there, greatly increasing the cost, correct?
That's my understanding.
So it would be very minimal, spread out, because it's just unimproved land.
Yeah, I think they pay something. I think it's less than $2,000 a year.
So that's the only increase that's going to go out there to property tax.
Right.
Right out.
Right.
Okay. The second thing is, did they calculate, I've heard the sheriff talk about it. We always want to talk about bringing industry and jobs here. It's a much bigger place than what they have. It's going to bring a lot more jobs here, isn't it?
It would, but when you compare it to the fully built out industrial facility, it's about even compared to the no action vacant land. Certainly, there's going to be 200 to 300 new jobs.
Yeah, something like 90 in office and 117 in jail, something like that. So it's around 200.
Those are county paid, family wage jobs.
Yeah, all of them.
They're existing jobs. It's like new jobs. They're existing jobs.
And for partly that reason,
three times the place.
Yeah, there will be.
You're going to need three times the correction.
I guess for comparison, wasn't Krause estimating 250 if they'd expanded there?
250 sounds about right.
Yeah. So 250 more employees?
No, 250 total.
Total.
If they expanded there. Mm-hmm. Councilperson Mutzler?
I'm puzzled a little bit about the conclusion that the revenue to the city on Glen would be less when you think that this is a manufacturing zone. We have no B&O tax. Mm-hmm. In Ferndale, so there's no ongoing revenue to the city of a manufacturing of widgets going on there. But the sales tax is going to come in from it's a high usage place, consuming stuff all the time,
mm-hmm.
consuming paper products and toilet paper, So it puzzled me that it seems like this is better revenue to the city ongoing than fast cap or something like that.
Absolutely, and on page 30 of the analysis, Exhibit 11, what they're doing is they're using taxable retail sales are based on statewide ratios of industrial employment to industrial taxable retail sales according to the 2012 estimates from the Washington State Department of Revenue. So it's an average where we basically said if we took the existing, I think it was 16% floor area coverage in that industrial area, and if we assume that there's one employee per every 750 square feet of indoor space, then we get 16 times 40 acres or whatever, or 0.16 times 40 acres, and we get X. Divide that, and we get the number of employees. The number of employees generate this much. In this case, it would be 371 industrial employees, and therefore we get that average. You could get an industry that has virtually no sales tax, or you could get one that has more.
We're also going to get the real estate, both sides of REIT 1 and 2 on that sale, that piece of property, which we know the sale price, don't we, approximately. So,
was it something like 7?
And we, it's a half.
I believe the paper.
Yes, half a percent of that.
Quarter and a quarter, so a half percent.
So 350 a year.
Yeah, 35,000.
34,500 is what they got.
Councilor Zimmerman and then Olson.
Dory, I attended the ConocoPhillips meeting for Lee County leadership at Week U here. And I think there may have been a couple other members. But in it, Doug Erickson said that that was one of the areas that they were looking at this legislative session, that the idea that charging ourselves sales tax to pay us back sales tax as government entities might go bye-bye. Just something out there. So it's,
it might not.
So saith the minority party. Councilperson Olson is next.
Correct me if I'm wrong, John. What John was saying about if there was a manufacturing place and they're selling widgets, we could end up with no sales tax on this point of delivery sales tax garbage that goes on now. So if they ship them everywhere, we wouldn't get a dime of sales tax.
Yeah, typically if it would have been, say, something like Krauss, they don't sell anything on site. Yeah, yeah. It ships all over the world.
Yeah.
So you're correct.
Like he said, we're better off getting, we're going to be definitely getting sales tax because it'll be consumed and used right
point
there.
Point of delivery.
One of the hardest things is figuring out what could happen on that site. We've gone for 500 years since pre-Native American settlement, since there was really anything on that property. Would we get anything on that property in the next 20 years? Who knows? So we looked at the average. Yeah, it could be up or down, but it ultimately gave us what we thought was a reasonable glimpse.
Okay, that's just informative, no action from council?
No action. If council as individuals wish to comment, they may certainly do so.
In the 26th here?
Yes, sir.
Or a written comment, October 14th by 4:30 p.m.
And please, if you do wish to make a comment, send it to the county to Mike Russell. You can tell me, but I'm probably going to forget. And so send it to him. That's the way to do it.
On the website.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, next up, mayor reports. This is from Guy at the Chamber. I'll pay attention to this. The Ferndale Political Forum is Thursday, October 3rd at 6 p.m. at the Ferndale High School Auditorium. Thursday, October 3rd, 6 p.m., Ferndale High School Auditorium. This Saturday, we're very pleased to have the LDS Church. Again, some very individuals. I'd love all you to drive through Vandyock Park and see what they did. They did some great progress on clearing our donated lot. Not done yet, but a lot of work, a lot of trees trimmed. Great job. Really a nice, beautiful site. When we got it cleared, I hadn't really looked at it until it got cleared. Yeah, this is a nice piece of property, so a great thing. We had Art in the Park this weekend. It was a event. We hope more people, but a nice event. The surprising, I guess, maybe the economy's better. Every artist said that they doubled their sales from last year. So I don't know what that means to the economy. I'm not a great art bear myself. So this morning I had an email. The email was sent to Sam Taylor, Gary Jensen, Greg Young, Mel Hansen, and Paul Ingram. So it becomes a public document once it comes across my desk. So I feel it's important to kind of share this email because some of the language in here is disturbing to me. Dear Mayor and Public Information Officer, and this comes from Councilperson Lloyd Zimmerman, it's come to my attention that you and the council may not have seen this video taken by citizen Jeff Stover on 2nd Avenue. It's played out as I predicted. It is playing out as I predicted when I and the Griffintown Neighborhood Association, didn't know we had one, questioned the placement of trees and especially the expensive tree light at that curve. Luis Ponce of Riker and Eby should be made to watch this and be informed as it could be used in a court of law. It is on YouTube under the title Snow Curbing in Ferndale. I have just over 3 months left on my term and this is one of my I freaking out told you so moments, Mel. Just an example of my common sense foresight that you have chosen to ignore. I have quite a growing list. I request that this video be shown to Planning Commission members and at City Council. Winter is just around the corner, and we anticipate this debacle to reappear in the right weather conditions. Have a nice day, and we'll see you all at council tonight. P.S.
My electromagnetic water conditioner experiment is working great, as I predicted. The reality is, you're about ready to squander $2 million of our money trying to fix the alkalinity problems you created with the water change. This is a big one on my list because it's not too late to avoid a constant mistake that our citizens should not be asked to bear. As the 70s hit song pops in my head, you've got to change your evil ways, baby. The evil I imply is not what I see on a personal level. It's a combination of lack of scientific knowledge of certain obscure phenomena combined with stubbornness or groupthink. A 6-1 vote does not reverse the laws of physics. So I've spoken out. Mr. Zimmerman or Councilor Zimmerman, would you like to respond to this email that which you want to insult all of us or what?
No, I appreciate for making part of the public record. And the idea that, I got a response back just before I came here, and your only response was, well, do they have minutes from their meeting?
The Griffintown Neighborhood Association.
Yeah. And that's what they call themselves as a group, and they didn't go through the 501c3s. And this brought to my attention, it was back there. But yeah, he filmed all this stuff, and if you haven't seen it, it's amazing. But what's happening here is the way it was designed, the way it was put together. If we have you'd have to see it. And Gary, you did watch the whole thing? The YouTube? It's on YouTube video? Well, it's just one of those things. It's how you design stuff and where you place stuff. And the idea of, you've got two different issues here. One is the water issue, but what brought it up when I was going through all my emails.
What's the water issue?
Oh, just the taking the calcium. It's not the calcium that we want out. I mean, that's very, very expensive to do as a point of use issue. But the idea is we want
people who lose control on that corner in a snowstorm, that we should mitigate for that in all construction.
You'll have to watch it.
I've watched it.
Okay.
I'm asking you, Lloyd, should we have mitigated not only there, but all construction where there's a possibility someone might lose control on a sheet of ice?
Well, placing the light poles and the trees.
No, I'm asking you a direct question. It has nothing to do with the lights of the trees.
That would be the mitigation of not placing expensive city assets right there at the corner where people are going to lose it.
Would you answer my question?
Did I answer it?
No.
Okay.
So should we mitigate all construction that Yori requires and all this, should we mitigate for all potential problems when you have ice and snow?
Well, I don't think I'm making the point of mitigating all. So I'd
say
no.
No, but I'm asking
this particular instance.
We did not do it here.
You can look at it and make those decisions yourself as one of the longest
serving
members. Well, I'm answering your question here, Mel.
Okay.
And I would think that you, as one of the longest sitting members of public utilities, would want to address this issue because I brought it up. It's there. And if someone is to get hurt, and this does become evidence that we were aware of it and we didn't do anything about it.
We were made aware of it after it was already installed. That's when you brought it up. It wasn't before it was installed.
I brought it before.
No, I'm sorry, Lloyd. You were wrong.
You have to go back.
You have time to go through. You didn't bring it up when it was still under construction.
No, I did, and you
no,
were
you
just beat up the thing,
all right.
You know? So,
and what you brought up.
The idea, no, we can't have a crystal ball.
What you brought up was let's widen the street, put parking on both sides, and make that corner sharper. That's what you brought up.
That wasn't anywhere in my...
You're
bringing up some stuff that has nothing to do.
I certainly remember that. You wanted parking in front of Jeff Stover's place, which would have widened.
So did all the people down
there. Made the corner tighter.
So is all the people down there.
Which made the corner even worse.
The big round sweeping thing at the right conditions, it's very, very dangerous.
Well, I guess the point is that we had a professional engineer, of which you are not. We had a professional public works director that is also an engineer, which of you are not, design a road certified by the state and inspected by the state. And so,
And the feds.
And so it's approved all regulations. And so, again, going back to even your water situation, your water filter is not certified.
It's not
legally.
It's not a filter.
I don't care what you call it, but it's not legal to use on a municipality. It is your opinion, and you're certainly entitled to your opinion, and you can continue on your opinion. But to, as my point, is you continue to insult a staff who are engineered and educated people who have much more education than you. You're not an engineer. You're not a water expert. You're not certified. But you always, well, you know, you didn't agree with me. I'm a genius. Therefore, you're all evil.
Not evil. It's not too late to investigate.
I don't know about your words.
Just change your way of thinking. That's the whole thing. Information is not transformation, Gary, as you know. You can have all the best information you want, but unless you fully inspect it and decide that you're going to move forward to do it, it's just a... Again, I'm glad you read this because it's on public record now. And we'll, at a couple of years from now, when I'm sitting out in the audience, I'll say, hey, excuse me, remember me? Oh, I'm here a year ago. We've got some public safety issues.
I move we adjourn.
Thank you for your attention.
I'm sorry. There are reports.
Any other council reports?
I'll withdraw that.
Okay. Finance director.
Nothing.
Nothing.
Pull up there on the library's contract signing.
Well, actually, I should say Tuesday we're having our pre-construction meeting, and at that point we've also been engaging the contractor, and the architects are coming up on Tuesday as well. We're going to be doing what is loosely termed value engineering. That is just trying to figure out how to cut back perhaps some of the materials or what have you to save a few dollars. And the contractor has been very cooperative, and of course they have to build this thing, so they've been poring over the plans, and I think they have some good ideas on how to simplify some matters. And so here Tuesday we hope that we'll be able to adjust some of the cost to meet our budget, but more importantly to your question, we should also have the contract signed here very soon. They have their bonding in place, and we were hopeful that we could adjust some of these costs and then roll those adjusted costs in the contract.
So has the man behind the curtain actually told us what kind of money we have, and do we get it in writing so that we can actually point it at somebody when they say, well, we really didn't have that,
well,
we had this. Not that that's happened
right
before.
Tomorrow the foundation folks are going to be at this meeting as well, and I'll verify one more time that the last numbers that they gave me are indeed the best.
I don't
numbers
have anything to do
have
tomorrow.
Where is this meeting being held?
At City Hall at 11 o'clock is the... I think it's 11. I believe it's 11 o'clock. For the
in a locked room.
Yeah.
With laser beams.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah.
This is the architects coming up?
Yeah, the architects are coming up. A lot of it will be somewhat technical from the standpoint of, you know, where do they put their job shack, who do they send their bill to, when do you get paid. You know, I mean, those type of real rudimentary things. But the bigger deal is going to be after that somewhat technical discussion where we can sit down and say, you know, if we change this or we change that material, or instead of framing it this way, you frame it that way. And that way the architect and the contractor can kind of be in the same room and kind of value some of these changes as to whether we'll indeed save some money or not.
Community development director.
Sorry, I did forget one thing. Very important thing, actually. As you know, Ryan Morrison left us. His last day was Friday, a week or two ago. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, some tall, red-headed guy. Yeah.
The ginger.
But so now I would like to introduce our new assistant planner, Haley Miller, who's actually sitting out here in the audience. Haley doesn't think she's learned anything yet, but if you work with her for 8 hours, you'll see that she really has learned a lot. She's caught on just fine.
She's at the right place.
It's not mine. We'll see if she comes in tomorrow.
Council members, before you, I gave all of you a copy of the Health and Wellness Committee cookbook. This was from an event we had where all the employees submitted recipes and brought in food, and we had kind of a cook-off. The mayor probably will brag that he won for the appetizer category. For the record, he was the only person who entered into the appetizer.
You didn't
category.
Have to say that. You didn't.
Technicality.
And
so he got last place.
Yeah, absolutely. At first. And I want to give credit to Deputy City Clerk Susan Duncan, who put this together. She did a lot of great work. There's a lot of info in here. But more to the point, this is part of our overall wellness program that the council helped approve early in the year, you know, with the intention of continuing to promote employee well-being in general. But also, you know, we have a chance to save 2% on our health insurance premiums. And so we've been working a lot in the last several years to work to reduce our costs while at the same time continuing to provide wonderful benefits to our employees and to continue to promote healthy, active lifestyles. You know, so we're not just trying to cut everything and slash their benefits. They have wonderful benefits. And we're also trying to encourage them to take, you know, more control over their health. In the long run, this is completely beneficial for the city.
So, you want to mention which team is going to win the walk across Washington now?
Or? I'm not going to mention that, but I will say that we have a team that's all bikers, and you're not going to win that. So
no way.
We have a walk across Washington coming up where all the employees who are participating will get a pedometer, but they can bike, swim, walk, and the goal is to walk no less than 100 miles in 6 weeks. But they can also walk the whole state or bike the whole state.
We won't be here for a whole month. None of the staff will be at City Hall for a month.
We're walking.
You're not allowed to count your at-work stuff. It's got to be off your time. The goal is additional walking.
May I submit a recipe next year of something that I would actually eat?
Only if it's healthy, sir.
I'm humble.
By the way, all of these are delicious. Especially the turkey chili,
by this,
which got second place.
It's a wonderful hors d'oeuvre that could be used as a salad, a main dish.
Yeah, that's all.
Public Works. Please. Motion to adjourn.
Council.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye.